This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Thomas Ariti. Coming up this Thursday, Corona captives, the temporary overseas workers with no idea about the road ahead, with COVID-19 taking hold across Australia. And sometimes these situations bring out the best in people. We'll take a look at how those stuck at home are using technology to keep each other happy.
It's been really quite enriching for the friendship experience to be sort of catching up every day for at least an hour, sometimes more, and then having that extended connection through sort of social media channels during the day. We really are living in each other's pockets, even though we're at such distance.
Well, the coronavirus, it's providing a seemingly endless stream of bad news, which of course we have to cover. Much of it's health related, and increasingly it's about the economic devastation caused by the unprecedented pandemic. By now, most of us would have seen or at least heard of the heartbreaking queues of people lining up to register with Centrelink. Some estimates predict the unemployment rate could reach around 11%. There are those who say it could get much worse than that. But today we're going to look at a rare ray of economic light during these dark times. Some industries are actually hiring, as Madeline Jenner reports.
In recent weeks, Gladys Berejiklian's job as New South Wales Premier has mostly been to deliver bad news. But this morning she had something good to offer. Jobs.
Yesterday the government announced we've hired an extra, or we're in the process of hiring an extra 1,000 people through Service New South Wales. These people will assist health in making various contacts with people in isolation, but also, most importantly, people are there to assist you if you have any questions.
1,000 new jobs might seem like a drop in the ocean right now, but at least it's a small beacon of light in a very dark employment market. Potentially hundreds of thousands face unemployment. Jess, who doesn't want to use her last name, will lose her job in events management early next week.
I am currently on the hunt for a new job. I support our family financially, or the majority of our financial support comes from my income. I'm definitely looking at getting out of any industry that is affected by catastrophic events, just so that moving forward as a family, we actually have some stability and some assurance.
Jess says she's had more than a few sleepless nights in the last fortnight, and the job search sites are pretty bleak.
It's very depressing looking for work at the moment, and I use that term quite considered because, you know, you just jump on the job boards of a morning and it's just got, you know, zero updated jobs. Like, there is literally no movement, or any movement that is there is in a space that I'm not qualified for.
Paul Bloxham is HSBC's chief economist for Australia, New Zealand and global commodities.
Well, clearly the jobs market is going to be hard hit by this event, and the hardest hit sectors are going to be areas that are related to services consumption, things like recreation, hospitality and the tourism industry. We know that collectively those things are about 14% of the economy, so it's going to be quite a hard hit. But there will be substitution. There will be other opportunities within the economy. One area that's obvious is going to be health. There's going to be lots of different things that need to be done in the health space. And so it would be expected there'll be some substitution towards health. Another area is, of course, everyone's in their homes now. So, and increasingly so. So without consuming those services outside the home, shifting to providing those services at home will create jobs as well. So there'll be roles to do deliveries and roles to deliver services that arrive at your front door.
And some industries are already hiring. Sarah McCartney is from the employment website Seek.
We are seeing organisations that are hiring, which is in direct response to changes we're seeing happening around us regarding shifts to online and digital delivery of goods and services, as well as increased demand for essential retail services. And they're looking for people who can do shelf stacking, delivery drivers. We've got roles in supply chain management, warehousing supervisors, warehousing managers. So that's really supporting that side of the market. And then we've also got some changes that we're seeing as organisations have to pivot and respond to the likes of offshore customer support and shared service functions closing down overseas. So we've got some large Australian organisations that are now looking to bring back customer service and support functions to Australian shores.
Sarah McCartney from the employment website Seek in that report from Madeline Jenner. Well, we've seen the images. You might have seen it in person. Australia's jobless queue is getting longer by the day as more companies lay off workers until the emergency's over. Our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan, has been monitoring the developments. Peter, first up is a flight centre which had already been badly damaged by the travel lockdown. Now their staff are feeling the pain. What have you heard?
Yes, Tom, in a statement to the Stock Exchange this morning, Flight Centre said the pre-coronavirus staffing levels are unsustainable. That means 6,000 Flight Centre sales and support roles will be lost globally, either temporarily or permanently. That's out of a 20,000 global workforce. In Australia, 3,800 staff will be stood down because of international travel bans and domestic border controls. And this follows similar hard decisions by Qantas and Virgin Australia and the travel agent Hello World. But Flight Centre says there will be redundancies and its global workforce will shrink by about 30% once this is over. The company's working to redeploy staff to more than 10,000 sales and call centre jobs elsewhere. Once the restrictions are lifted, there will be opportunities to return to Flight Centre, but clearly not for all.
And I guess in line with that, Peter, we spoke about Virgin Australia yesterday. That was about the decision to stand down, you know, a huge number of staff. You're now hearing more from the airline. What's the latest there?
Yes, Virgin CEO Paul Scurrah now says that more than 1,000 of the 8,000 workers asked to take leave in the face of the coronavirus will probably be made redundant. Now, that's an update on yesterday's announcement, which shows Virgin's measures are more drastic than first thought. Virgin is also looking to redeploy staff to other companies, including major supermarkets and the big banks that need staff during the pandemic.
And shops, they're continuing to close their doors. We're hearing now from the retailer Premier Investments. It's temporarily closing all of its stores in Australia. What does that mean for staff?
Well, Tom, Premier owns the well-known retail brands like Portman's, Peter Alexander, Just Jeans, JJ's and Smiggle. All those stores will close at the end of trading today until the 22nd of April. Globally, that's 9,000 employees stood down. They will be able to access annual leave and long service leave, and Premier's Chief Executive Mark McInnes will work without pay or any of his entitlements. A big factor in all of this is the cost of leases. But with leases expiring during this year, Premier says it doesn't intend to pay any rent globally for the duration of the shutdown. And Flight Centre is in the same predicament with leases and is currently renegotiating with landlords to get a better deal.
And while we have you there, Peter, the Bureau of Statistics, they've just released the latest data on how the virus is hurting businesses. What are they seeing?
Yes, we're now starting to see this sort of information trickling out. The ABS says about half of the Australian businesses they surveyed experienced an adverse impact and that 86% of businesses expected to be impacted in future months. Of course, this predates the Phase 1 social distancing measures. Accommodation and food services are the hardest hit, with over three quarters of businesses reporting that they're already doing it tough.
That's our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. There's a vast pool of people in the country who face an even bleaker future than many Australians. The 1.7 million workers who are here on temporary visas, including student visas. Unions are concerned these workers have no rights to New Start or any other welfare payment, and their health needs aren't covered by Medicare. Rachel Mealy has this report.
Camilla Cottram says she needs help right away.
I'm really stressed, really anxious. I have on and off days that I believe that everything will be all right, and days that I just have no hope and I fear for what's going to happen.
Camilla is from Brazil. She's in Australia completing a Master's of Social Work. She worked in a hotel as a casual but lost her job as a result of the crisis. She stayed in Australia when the crisis broke because she felt she would jeopardise her future if she went home.
I have just another 20, like technically 20 weeks of study to be qualified social worker. So I thought of going home, but then the burden is now the semester is online. But if I have to come back next semester with all these closing borders and everything, I'm not sure if I'll be able to. So we are advised by international students' agents to go home as a last resort.
Mark Morey is the Secretary of Unions New South Wales.
They have no right or entitlement to Newstart or other welfare payments. They don't have any access to Medicare. As visa holders, they're required to have private health insurance, but the problem now is many of them have no work and they can't even pay for that. So there's 1.7 million workers now stuck in Australia with no means of support.
He says people who are here on temporary work visas are owed some assistance because they've been contributing to the economy across a range of industries.
Well, they range from high-skilled right through to students on student visas. Many of these people are young people who are in the universities, who are working 20 hours a week. Many of them are the people who are serving your coffee, cleaning your offices and your houses. They're working in hospitality, tourism, retail, a whole range of industries. And with the massive collapse in the service sector at this time, these are the most affected and most vulnerable people.
Mr. Morey says he hopes to see immediate action taken by the federal government.
The federal government needs to look after 1.7 million workers who are on visas who have been paying taxes in this country. And it's just grotesque that we're prepared to take their tax money, but not help them in this time of need. The federal government needs to include them in their packages, in their stimulus packages of support for workers who no longer can go to work.
The Secretary of Unions New South Wales, Mark Morey. That report from Rachel Mealy. Now, the ACTU says it's received an assurance from the federal government that the issue is being looked at, but it's yet to see the detail. Got a bit of an update from Queensland now, and starting next week, schools in that state will move to a system of home learning. Queensland's Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk says children of essential workers and vulnerable kids will still be allowed to physically go, but all other children will shift to online learning from home.
This is really important. It's exactly what we have been pushing, that the essential workers, and that means really anyone who is currently in our workforce. So it's not just our health workers, it's not just our emergency services workers, it's not just our police workers. It involves anyone who's in our workforce, including people who stack shelves at Coles and Woolies and work in a whole different range of industries, that their students will still be allowed to go to school.
There's an update in South Australia too. The government there has announced its schools and preschools will be pupil-free in the week before the Easter holidays. It says that it'll give teachers time to prepare for online learning for the start of term two. Now, it seems like it's been weeks since we've covered anything other than the coronavirus pandemic, and we'll have more on it soon. But for the moment, let's look at a surprise guilty plea entered this morning in a New Zealand court. And it's come from the Australian charged over the Christchurch attacks in March last year on two mosques in the city. Brenton Tarrant appeared via video link for the hearing from Auckland, where he's being held in a maximum security prison. Our reporter Barbara Miller has been following the case. We spoke earlier. Barbara, a surprise development. Can you take us through what happened?
That's right. A big shock there today, Tom. What happened was the court was informed earlier in the week about Brenton Tarrant's intention to change his plea from not guilty to guilty. The court then decided to hold this hearing despite pretty strict coronavirus restrictions in place across New Zealand. In fact, the country went into what they call a level 4 lockdown at midnight last night. It wasn't possible to publicise the reason for the hearing because Tarrant, of course, had the right to change his mind about changing the plea. So in court were only two imams from the two mosques affected, the Linwood Mosque and the Al Noor Mosque. And in total, there were only 17 people in court because of coronavirus restrictions, with people sitting far apart from one another. The names of the 51 people murdered in those attacks were read out. Brenton Tarrant, who was appearing via video link from the prison he's being held in Auckland, entered a guilty plea. The same then for the 40 charges of attempted murder and the one charge of engaging in a terrorist attack. And Tarrant, originally from New South Wales, was the first person in New Zealand to be charged under that terrorism legislation. Then that whole proceeding was suppressed for a further hour. The judge, Justice Cameron Mander, wanted to give the imams time to tell the victims and their families about this surprise development.
Okay, so what are the next steps?
Well, he's been remanded in custody until what they're calling a nominal date of May the 1st. It's hoped by then they may be able to have a date for sentencing. Now, of course, that's massively affected by the coronavirus crisis, and the victims are being assured that the sentencing date won't be set until a time when they are able to attend. So police now talking to victims and the families of those killed about drawing up victim impact statements.
And Barbara, has there been any reaction yet from the victims' families?
Some are coming out now. The initial reactions are that they are relieved. They are, of course, thankful. I was in New Zealand just a week or two back as the one-year anniversary of these attacks was marked. And actually, a couple of families that we spoke to said they were, in a strange way, looking forward to the trial because they wanted to see justice being done. I think they also wanted to see Tarrant in court. So I suspect they will be quite disappointed that they weren't there today. Of course, they will accept these are extraordinary times. And I think many of them, in a sense, will look forward to that day in court when the sentencing happens and when they're able to read out those impact statements or have them read out on their behalf.
Barbara Miller reporting there. On ABC Radio across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. Thanks very much for your company. Remember, you can also download our podcast. Back to the latest on the coronavirus pandemic now, and cruise ships off Australia's coastline have become a major problem for the nation. After the high number of passengers who disembarked from the Ruby Princess in Sydney and later tested positive for COVID-19, several states are closing their ports to cruise ships. But that leaves thousands of people stranded at sea, and some of the ships don't have enough fuel to turn back. Political reporter Alexandra Beach has more.
The Artania is anchored off the coast of Fremantle, and on board, seven people have tested positive for coronavirus so far. The West Australian Premier, Mark McGowan, told Channel 7 the boat needs to leave Australian waters.
What we're saying to the ship is you need to leave, and we're saying to the Commonwealth, you need to help us get that ship to leave.
The Artania is not the only ship approaching Fremantle. The Vasco da Gama is expected to arrive tomorrow, but it's a slightly different case. It's carrying around 800 Australians, so its passengers will be transferred to quarantine on Rottnest Island. Another vessel, the MSC Magnifica, is carrying passengers from Germany, France and Italy and has been told it won't be docking. But that ship is already fuelled and well-stocked for its return journey. The Artania has no Australians on board, but it needs fuel to get back to Germany.
So we've got to work out a way of refuelling her. What we'd like to see is the Commonwealth assist us here. You know, the Commonwealth has assets here. It has defence assets. It has the Navy. We'd like their assistance to try to get the Artania to leave as soon as possible.
Some of the Artania's passengers will be allowed to come ashore for urgent medical treatment. But Mark McGowan is calling for them to be treated at a Commonwealth facility, possibly a defence base, away from the general public. His plea comes after condemnation of the handling of the arrival of another cruise ship, the Ruby Princess, in Sydney. 2,700 passengers were allowed to disembark last week. Now more than 130 of them have tested positive for coronavirus, making up 10% of all the cases in New South Wales. The New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, has today ruled out a repeat of that.
And I can confirm that nobody will be getting off a ship in New South Wales until further notice, and I want to thank the New South Wales Police Force for assisting us in that process.
Another major problem is how to bring home the many Australians currently on a cruise overseas. The Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, has told Channel 9 there are more than 3,000 Australians on over 30 cruise ships around the world right now.
So it is a very large number, and they are scattered, as you might expect, to the four winds. The cruise lines are being very, very constructive in the approach that they are taking. A lot of them are assisting their passengers by organising charters. We are working directly with them. In so many ports, I couldn't begin to count, but literally from South America to Europe, to the United States and further afield.
And the federal government says it's also working closely with the WA government to figure out what to do about the foreign ships trying to dock at Fremantle.
Alexandra Beach. With physical distancing measures well underway, many Australians are turning to social media to check in on their friends and connect with their communities. Neighbours who'd normally say perhaps a little more than hello to each other in an apartment hallway have linked up in Facebook groups to keep spirits up. And while social media giants are being blamed for allowing the spread of rumours and misinformation, millions of Australians are using the platforms for good. Isabel Rowe has been taking a look.
Blackbirds singing in the dead of night.
Singing teacher Nikki McGrath regularly takes the guitar out to her apartment balcony.
All your life.
But with hundreds in her large block working from home, she now has a live audience.
The apartment complex that I live in is pretty big, and we've got a private Facebook community group for the residents. And so someone posted on there and just said, hey, to the chick who was playing on her balcony and singing, that was awesome, keep it up. And one of the people on there had this brilliant idea of us all getting together on our balconies on a Friday afternoon and having a sing. So that's our plan for this Friday night.
Do you know what you're going to sing?
Oh, I have no idea. There's a lot of pressure on deciding the right song.
Tomorrow night, Nikki McGrath will live stream her performance to a Facebook group called The Kindness Pandemic, so others around the world can sing along too. She's been overwhelmed with the response.
There's just been so much negativity in the news just because of the nature of what's going on around the world. It's really tragic. But then there are these glimmers of light and hope and happiness and joy, the temporary new normal.
With Australians encouraged to stay at a distance from others, social media has become a crucial connector. Many, in enforced isolation, have taken to documenting the minutiae of life inside four walls.
Day five of quarantine here in lockdown. And as you can see, I've given my lovely co-worker some lovely flowers, admittedly only from the balcony. But
ABC Grandstand's Patrick Stack has recently returned from an overseas ski trip and is working from home in Sydney's eastern suburbs.
Primarily using Instagram to sort of do a daily quarantine wrap, just to sort of keep yourself sane and have a bit of fun with your friends on social media. But beyond that, what's probably been most valuable has been sort of logging in on video conferencing services with about half a dozen of our mates every day, sort of for an hour from 5 to 6, just to check in, seeing how each other's going.
There's also been a surge in connections between people who'd never usually meet. Communities around the world are setting up Facebook groups for their local area to keep tabs on isolated neighbours and put calls out for volunteers.
Hi everyone, thanks for offering to assist last week with help for our public housing residents.
Hi everyone, I'm a registered nurse who's grown up in the eastern suburbs. I have previously worked as an assistant.
Does anyone have a medium-sized ladder they could loan me for a week or two?
Where are you based, Vicky? I have a ladder you can use. I'm at Bondi Junction.
Queensland University of Technology digital media researcher Professor Axel Bruins.
There's been plenty of groups and communities that have emerged across social media platforms now that play that social role that is curtailed in other environments.
But he says the social media giants have made mistakes during the pandemic.
Particularly early on in the piece, there was a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of misinformation circulating, largely because there was an information vacuum. And for Facebook, it's very, very difficult to deal with that until it itself has worked out what actually is correct information, until it's worked out who the correct authorities are who are spreading information. And of course, we keep seeing also misinformation coming from politicians, from official authorities. So for Facebook, that's a very difficult decision then to make about whether it should actively say, well, don't listen to Donald Trump, don't listen to certain people, because what they're telling you is not in your best interests.
Facebook says it is trying to do that. It's launched a COVID-19 information centre, which will soon appear at the top of news feeds globally, directing users to official health information. The company has also announced it's working with fact-checking groups to screen viral posts and reduce their visibility if they're found to be false.
Isabel Rowe reporting there. That's all from the World Today team for this Thursday. Linda Mottram and the PM team will be along this evening. Just remember, these are unprecedented times. Please wash your hands, keep your distance from people if you can, just stay at home. I'm Thomas Ariti. Thanks very much for your company.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.